We are sitting down with Mr. David Alter. He's a man who's been on the show many, many times. We talked to him about the Toronto Maple Leafs. We pick his brain. David, how is the evening treating you so far?
It's been tiring. I just finished a gym session trying to stay young. It's difficult. Father Time is undefeated, and I'm just trying to make it a close game.
Well, I'm sure you got him backed into a corner right now, so you're
all right. No, definitely not.
Well, my co-host is always right here. He is the youthful one of the group, I bet you, Mr. Dylan Fournier. Dylan, how's it going tonight, buddy?
Hey, yo, we're pretty good. I had a great day. How's your day?
Day is not bad out here. Sweltering hot in Nova Scotia, but no problems. We're loving it. We love the hot weather. Keep the snow at bay. The only thing, good thing about winter is, of course, hockey. Gentlemen, I want to ask you the question. July 21st, 2016. A member of Leafs Nation signed his first contract and officially became a Toronto Maple Leaf on paper, Mr. Austin Matthews. Where were you when he signed that deal, David?
You know what? I couldn't tell you because when he signed the deal, I don't think it was as big a deal as the other watershed days in Austin Matthews' career because it was pretty much a foregone conclusion he was going to sign. I mean, apart from the bonuses thing, there wasn't really much of a debate about whether or not Austin Matthews was going to sign. I could tell you where he was when he was drafted. I could tell you where I was when the Leafs won the lottery. And I could tell you where I was in his first NHL game. I was present at all of those three things. As for when he was drafted, as for when he was signed, I don't know. I mean, it's July 21st. I was working at Twitter at the time, freelancing for a whole bunch of places. My main job was working at Twitter at the time. So I might've either been at work or I might've been on vacation in New York. Cause I remember I did go that summer. I did go for a few days to visit a friend, but I don't remember when in the summer it was. So I couldn't tell you the exact day because to me, like, you know, there's days you'll always remember, but when he signed, I don't think is one where I was just like, oh my God, he signed, because like, it was such a foregone conclusion given all the other things related to him. The big deal was when he got drafted and when he, and when the Leafs won the lottery. That those are the two I could definitely tell you where I was at for.
I think for me, I just let a breath of exhale out though when he finally did sign, just because so many things for so long for the Maple Leafs were not going right. Ever since, I would say, Pat Quinn was relieved of his duties, it seemed like that the team kind of went on a downward spiral for a very long time. So good things happening to the Maple Leafs were few and far between. Mitch Marner, Austin Matthews, Willie Nylander, Morgan Rielly. A few bright spots along the way. I want to ask Dylan, do you remember where you were? Or are you in the same boat as David? Kind of, hey, I remember where he was when he got drafted or the lottery, but as for actually putting pen to paper, probably not.
Well, you did mention that I am the youthful person in this group. So I don't exactly remember where I was when he signed. I could tell you where I could have been if I was as good as him. I would have been at the draft with him if I was as good as him at hockey. But unfortunately, I was not. I could tell you where I was the day before he signed his extension, and that was when I actually met Austin back in behind the locker room there. He signed a jersey for me, so that was a pretty cool moment. Wish he would have told me that he was signing an extension. That would have been cool to break the news to all my friends, but, you know, that doesn't happen every day. So, wasn't a very important day to me, so... besides the draft and that extension, those were the only key ones in my life.
Well, I lead us down this path of wondering Austin Matthews' contract. Obviously, we've seen Johnny Gaudreau and now the situation happening with Matthew Tkachuk. I want to ask David. I want to ask him because Frank Zaravelli seems to think Austin Matthews is going to be a Toronto Maple Leaf for life. I'm wondering, David, do you feel that Austin Matthews – will go the Johnny Gaudreau, Matthew Tkachuk route, or do you think he's happy in Toronto? I'll say my caveat. I think he's happy as a Maple Leaf. A lot of opportunities, a lot of different things that happened to him in this market. Obviously, friendship with Justin Bieber, who's a huge Leaf fan, might be a feather in the cap that helps. But we all know business. But I think Matthews is in the business of being in a market with a lot of eyeballs, and what bigger market than the Maple Leafs? Always the media train is churning. So what do you think of Austin Matthews, David?
Look, I think Austin Matthews is going to lean towards one direction, but that will happen after this season. I don't think anyone knows what's going to happen right now. We do know that he likes it here, and we do know that this topic kind of got inflamed by some interviews from some Calgary media types who are just ready to be like, well, it's happening in Calgary, so it's going to happen in Toronto, where anyone who's a Canadian that doesn't live in Toronto, that hates Toronto, knows one thing is certain, that Toronto is not like anywhere else in Canada. Like in terms of, like in terms of the way Toronto is, like as a big city, as it's identified as Canadian, you know, people from outside of Toronto seem to hate Toronto. It's one of those things where trying to make that comparison that Calgary and Toronto are the same thing is not even close. And like, that's like from a budget, from a how much money is spent on development, from a arenas facility standpoint, there's so much different that the only common denominator in this is that it's American players playing in Canadian markets, and that's it. Like, there is nothing to suggest that Austin Matthews is ready to jump ship and leave, but there's also nothing to suggest that he's committed to here. And if I'm Austin Matthews, I'm not really showing my cards right now, because look, this is a team that, even though he's been on it, they haven't gotten past the first round, and it's getting harder and harder to retain people because of salary commitments and whatnot. And there's pretty big gambles going into this season as well. And all those things combined, you really have to just wait and see, because you know what? You can't sign on the dotted line for an extension until July 1st, 2023 at earliest. So why even show your hand one way or another? But like, where this all kind of got stirred up about the Calgary media lamenting on Matthew Tkachuk and Johnny Gaudreau already left. I mean, I get it. Like, it sucks for them. But to suggest that the same thing's going to happen here is categorically false, because no one actually knows, and they're not at all the same thing.
No, I agree with you. I see Dylan's got his finger up here. Dylan, go ahead, man.
Now, obviously, with being a very large market like Toronto, there's a lot of trade talk. And I know there's been some big names like Matthew Tkachuk that have popped up in recent trade talks. Now, do you think the Leafs are holding on to Knies very tight in the case that Austin Matthews were to leave in 2 years? Just because that, you know, they're very similar players.
I mean, I don't know. I'm not sure about that. I mean, there's a lot of hype with Matthew Knies, and he's certainly been developing very well. But I don't know if he's ever going to be what Austin Matthews was going in and has been and is right now. I do think that there is a protection when it comes to Matthew Knies, solely because the Leafs are so thin in the prospect pool as it is, that you don't want to make it thinner unless you're absolutely sure about some sort of move, because it is so paper thin right now. Like, I've been at Leaf development camp, and there's so many unsigned walk-ons to fill out a development camp just because there's not enough prospects to fill it. And then some of the prospects that they do have, they're either too old or they're stuck in Europe and paperwork is an issue to get them to be part of this. So I don't think that's it. Matthew Knies could very well end up being something, but it's so, it's really hard to say. Like, that first scrimmage that I saw of him, he didn't look particularly great. But he hadn't played in a competitive game since April 6th or whatever it was, whatever the first day of the Frozen Four was. And the guy covering him was William Villeneuve, who just played 3 weeks ago in the most intense hockey of his life, winning a Memorial Cup. So it wasn't really fair. Let's put it that way. And so that's why I caution all the overhype and all this other stuff. Like, it's really, I know we're in Toronto, like it's really hard to do that. But when you're there every day, you just kind of like, you're like, okay, what is this? What is this really going to be? And look, there's a reason he didn't jump ship. Most people, if the team was after you to guarantee you some playing time on a roster that was going to the playoffs, a lot of prospects would jump at it. He didn't feel he was ready. And that, I think, says a lot. And that's why the Leafs are not only taking a cautious approach with him, but he doesn't want to get in too early and then end up being not living up to what he wants to be. And so I think, yeah, he could potentially be something, but it's way too early to tell.
What I like, too, about the Matthew Nye situation, it shows a little maturity on his part to know some guys would have just jumped at that brass ring and took the money and, you know, jumped in the NHL and maybe floundered. But also, I like the way that Austin Matthews himself is reaching out to this young prospect and talking to him and, you know, saying, make sure you're ready. You know, don't make the jump if you're not comfortable. You know, go back, refine your game, work on everything, become the complete player you want to be before you get here. I like that leadership quality from Austin Matthews. That really caught my attention as another young guy. We talk about maturity. That's another guy who's taking a step. But I don't know if you see it that way, David, but I definitely see that from Austin Matthews and thought that was pretty cool of him.
Look, not to change topics too early in the podcast, but I don't remember when it was, and I don't remember if it was on purpose or a slip of the words, but after one of Austin Matthews' benchmark games, Sheldon Keefe said, he's our leader. And that stood out to me that he actually used those words when there already is a captain of this team. And all the other things that Austin Matthews is doing is showing those leadership capabilities. And he certainly is that guy. And he kind of bridges being able to identify with younger guys coming up and can also identify with some of the older players who were there, who were in Austin Matthews' spot as a first overall pick and have to adapt and adjust to the game as the game is moving. And you can make the argument now that the game is adjusting so fast that even someone like an Austin Matthews always has to work to make sure the game doesn't pass him by. So, yep. So it's one of those things where, you know, he's been very good at just kind of being very aware of himself and also being able to see things and identify things. And, you know, it's not that he sees a little bit of him in Matthew Nyes, but they're both from the same area. They both train together in that regard. And so, you know, the Phoenix hockey representation is a bit of a kinship there because it's such an obscure place that we consider a hockey hotbed, but it's becoming that. And that's why the Arizona Coyotes, they can tout that as a little bit of their success by having that imprint there. So, I think that's important. I think you saw with Michael Bunting, because he played in Tucson and they had that kind of chemistry and being able to talk about that market, I think that kind of helped with the off ice, which can somewhat translate on the ice if you have the skills, which is why that's worked out really well. So look, I mean, there is that kinship there. And Austin Matthews has done a pretty good job of doing the kind of captain-like things, leadership group things, of making sure that that everyone feels welcome and doing whatever. And not to say John Tavares hasn't been doing the same thing. I think Nicholas Moldenauer, who's from Toronto, the other pick in the draft, he was telling me the other day that you know, at the practice facility, just having breakfast with the other prospects, and John Tavares walked up to him and introduced himself. And he was like, that's pretty crazy as a Toronto kid witnessing that. So Leafs have a good leadership group in that regard. And Austin Matthews is certainly at the top of that for sure.
Well, we will revisit the Austin Matthews leadership here thing in a little while. I have another question to pick your brain on, but let's talk about Leafs dev camp. We're talking about it right now. Matthew Nyes, we all saw the clip that went around the internet of him battling with the puck and going along the boards. It was a 15 or 20 second clip that sent the world blazing. Outside of Matthew Nyes, is there anyone who caught your eye at dev camp that Leaf fans may not be talking about? Obviously, a lot of this stuff we don't get to see especially myself way out here on the East Coast, except for snippets and clippets I could put out or little blurbs that get written about certain guys. Is there someone who stood out to you that you're like, this guy right here is starting to take steps and we should take notice?
I think William Villeneuve is probably that guy. And like, just being able to go to the Memorial Cup, advance that way. And now he'll get a lot of reps with the Marlies this season. But also, if the depth gets tested, it's not outside of the realm of possibility, injuries, whatever the case may be, that if they feel he can handle it, that maybe they give him a try and see what they've got in that regard. Like, he looked really good out there. But again, the problem with prospects, and when you saw that stuff, is there's not a lot to go up against, right? Like, no. there really isn't. That's why, as cool as that was to see, it's like, yeah, but this dev camp is so thin. Like, so thin. So it's actually been hard for me to really get excited and write about a lot of this other stuff, just because I know that this isn't really a test of the metal. Like, there's guys that are missing, and the prospect, there's no first rounders here. Like, it's tough. Like, yeah, these guys are developing. Like, some of the second rounders are there. Like, Fraser Minton's pretty good too. He looks like he's got the poise and the size. He looks like an NHL player out there. He's just got to work on his skating a little bit more. But the same goes for Nyes. Nyes is continuing to work on his footwork, and you can tell, you know, those type of guys, like the guys who I've mentioned, they're getting extra time with all these dev coaches after stuff is done, because they just know that they have a limited time there, and they're going to try and soak everything up before they have to go. So they're getting like 4 or 5 days of like, I think I took a clip of Matthew Nyes working with 4 dev coaches and a goaltender.
Yes, I saw that.
Going all over the place, just working on footwork and everything. They're not doing that with everybody, because not everyone's a prospect or not everyone's in that same kind of pedigree, right? So
yeah,
it's tough. But yeah, I think the William Villeneuve, like, we heard whispers about how good he was, but he looks like he's taken a real step there. And the way he controlled Nyes in that first scrimmage, I'm curious to see if it translates again tomorrow for the final one. Because that one-on-one coverage, it looked like it was all Villeneuve there. And that's why it kind of surprised me. But then when I looked at, this guy just played in the Memorial Cup 3 weeks ago compared to a guy who hasn't played since April in a game-like setting. I get it. I totally get it. So, it's tough. And, you know, there are some – the goaltenders, they're kind of working separately. So it's kind of hard to judge them, because they're really only doing drills. They're not like – you know, Keith Petruzzelli looked pretty good in
the scrimmage. That was the guy I was going to ask you about.
He looked pretty good in the scrimmage. He's big, and he doesn't I got some time to talk to him one-on-one. And, you know, he's another interesting one. But there's so many other Leaf guys that like, it's going to be crowded in that crease. Like, you look at it this way. They've got Murray and Samsonov up at the big club, right?
Yep.
Then they've got Shalgren and Wall.
Yep.
I believe they still have Ian Scott.
Ian Scott, he's gone. He left today. He retired today.
Oh, 'cause too many injuries.
Too many injuries. He's walking right away from the
game. I was just going to ask you about that.
I actually did not see that. So thank you for letting me know that. I wasn't sure.
It's sad, because I watched him here in Halifax.
He was really good.
He was amazing.
He was really good.
It was extremely sad.
I remember when he got hurt during training camp last year, and it was like, oh, because he was likely going to be the guy that could have taken the next step before anybody else. But thank you for bringing that up, because I missed that today. I knew that he wasn't listed on any sort of depth thing, but I didn't know what was going on. So outside of that, we have Wall and Shalgren, like, with the Marlies.
Yeah.
And then you have Petruzzelli. You've got Dryden McKay, who's not at camp because he's still serving this 6-month doping ban. So he's not permitted to take part in any sort of Marlies thing until mid-August or mid to late August. But then you've got the Flint goaltender, Luke Cavallin,
yep,
as well. And and then you've got, well, like the Hildebees and the Russian guy, like they have their loans that they can go play for. But other than that, it's a pretty crowded crease. So like there's like nine goalies. Like it's injuries will happen and guys will move up that way. But yeah, it's like when you look at the Petruzzellis, who I liked a lot, like, I don't know. Do you have Wall and Schalgren split and make one of them go to Newfoundland so that they're getting more reps to be ready? Or do you make them equal tandem at the Marlies and then equal tandem? Because a lot of times when you didn't do tandem stuff, you would actually have your third string or your fourth string goaltender actually go to the ECHL because you knew they would get more games. And so now I don't know what they do with the setup that they have right now.
Well, could a loan be to another AHL team for one of these guys as well to allow them to play?
I mean, the loans usually happen later because these teams want to develop their own guys, right? Usually when you see loans like that to get playing time, it's teams that know that like they're either out or they have injury issues and they have a spot for them, or they want to make sure that person, like, you know, that they're going to be on a playoff run so they can get more time for that person. Like that's usually where that stuff comes from those minors loans that way, or things where it's like a favor for a hometown. Like you saw with Carter Hutton when, before he came to Toronto, they just never removed the AHL affiliation of that trade. And he stayed there until the Leafs actually did bring him up toward the end of the year, which surprised me because I didn't think that was actually going to be an option for Toronto. But Keith Petruzzelli's looked really good. We're talking a lot about the technical stuff, and you know he's been pretty fortunate to stay healthy for much of his career, which has been pretty good. And he's a big guy, and that's hard for big guys to do. So I like where he could go there, but I'm sure Dryden McKay and Luke Cavallin are going to get some looks too, and it makes for a very crowded crease.
Well, in that case, I mean, obviously the Maple Leafs have to offload a little cap here, and we'll talk about that in a few moments. Could one of those guys be a chip that you put in a trade to add as a sweetener to a team that might need a goaltending prospect?
I don't know if anyone looks at any of the Leafs minor signings that way as a piece in that regard. Like they're not NHL contracts for most of them, right? Like the guys below the AHL are on Marlies only deals, right? The AHL, the CHL, like perhaps, but like it's going to run into goalie trouble. I don't know if anyone, like these guys could have signed anywhere at that time, right? So I don't know if it's, I don't know if that's really the viable option. When it comes to salary cap stuff, I have my own thoughts on that. But I don't think it's really necessarily going to be one of those things where they feel like someone's really going to be into Dryden McKay and has got to get, unless he goes on some sort of run to start the season, the Leafs just don't have room for him. And then they can use that to shore up something else. Sure. We'll see what that issue ends up being. But goaltending, I think, is going to be a theme this year. Particularly in the starter spot. So I remember toward, during that, the draft, it felt like every day I was writing a goalie story. And then it seems like, and then even at the end of the year, it felt like I was writing a lot of goalie stories. And then I feel like this year is just going to be that again. So we'll see what happens there.
All right. Well, let's change gears from dev camp. Obviously, we'll pick your brain when training camp comes around, when these guys go up against some NHLers and really test their mettle a little bit more. What do you think so far, just a gut reaction so far of the Toronto Maple Leafs offseason and what they've done? We'll talk any names just off the jump, but what does your gut tell you about what they've done so far?
I like the depth forward signings. They've always shown an ability to do well in that regard. Minus Nick Ritchie, but even then they were able to turn that into something useful. So I have no problem with it. I found it interesting that Kyle Dubas said that they identified someone like Nicholas Obey-Kubel as someone who can kind of make up for the speed that they'll lose in someone like Ilya Mikheyev. So that's interesting. whether that's going to be a tough spot. I do like the justification with Adam Gaudette, and I did watch some of his tape at the Worlds to see what the Leafs liked in him, and I think they see like a bunting light possibility there, someone who can go up and down, but in the right situation with the puck can really excel, and did that at the Worlds for USA. They didn't win, but like he was their leading scorer in that yep. regard, and he had a big overtime goal against Sweden, I believe it was. So that was pretty interesting. And you know, he actually did talk about the fact that he had some sort of stomach fungus that was stopping him from putting on weight, which was why he actually wasn't able to be the Adam Gaudette as he was touted. And so now he feels like he's himself. So it really is kind of one of those, okay, this kind of under the radar, we're getting this guy again, and we saw it at the World. So diamond in the rough, low risk gamble there. The big one obviously is Cale Yarncroke. Yep. And a lot of people are excited about that. The term was something else, but then when I saw that it was virtually the max signing bonus he got in that, it kind of gave me the belief that the signing bonus Leafs are back from 2019, signing mid-range guys to signing bonus deals that will allow for maximum flexibility once those are paid out, if they need to trade those contracts elsewhere and remove the cap hit. So, from the forward standpoint, it looks pretty good. Oh, Victor, the defense, Victor Mete and Jamie Benn. Jamie Benn looks like he could be the potential Labushkin replacement, I guess, from a physicality standpoint, if they need someone like that. There's also Victor Mete, which is very much a Kyle Dubas-like player. Offensive, can kind of move the puck, but there are issues there. But in the right circumstances, right development, they could perhaps really use him in a spot. So I like those spots. Of course, the number one question is going to be goaltending. I've made the argument to a lot of radio interviews I've done this year that you can make the case that the Leafs starting goaltending spot got worse, but their goaltending depth got better.
Yeah.
Because like their backup is a better spot than it was before.
True enough, yep.
Then, like, just because the moment they signed Ilya Samsonov, like that makes sense. I knew the moment he was unqualified, the Leafs were going to go after him and try to get him on the cheap. There were a lot of reasons why that made sense. They didn't have a lot of money to spend on a goalie, and also young goaltenders who are near UFA do not want to sign long-term deals and will go low in the effort to really bet on themselves and get paid afterwards. And so that's why there was a common theme that with everyone except for Yarncroke, like everyone was not qualified. Like it was young guys who entered the UFA pool, and the Leafs were able to kind of pick them all off. And the other big theme, everyone had playoff experience. Every player that was signed has playoff experience.
True enough.
So that's another one. I think something that they knew they were kind of getting, they didn't openly admit that it was going to be the number one thing they looked for, but it's something that they knew was an added benefit that they could at least check off on a box with all these guys. Unqualified offered young players betting on themselves is the Leafs strategy for when there's no cap space. And they tried that with Nick Ritchie when they signed him to that 2-year deal.
Yep.
Everyone else is just kind of a UFA for UFA's sake. But there was also Kasha. He was also not qualified last year, and then was not qualified again and signed that deal with Washington. So that one was probably the biggest head scratcher in terms of how that all went down, just given everything here. So I thought that was interesting too.
So is that your theory with the cap as well, that the Leafs are kind of, you know, mining for these guys who aren't qualified and want to bet on themselves, also, you know, staggering the contracts as well to keep themselves as close to the the LTIR limit if they need to as well, something Brandon Pridham's really good at.
Yeah, well, I mean, they don't really have much of a choice. Like, the cap is only going up $1 million. They just inked Morgan Riley. His new contract kicks in now. So there's just money being eaten everywhere that there's just not a lot of space. Like, Ilya Mikheyev, you knew he was going to get paid. I was actually surprised he got as high as he did.
But, yeah.
But good for him.
Yeah.
He definitely, you know, the Canucks saw a lot of Ilya Mikheyev in that
in the bubble year. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, like, yeah.
Not the bubble year. I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. I didn't know what you're talking about. Yeah. So they knew, they saw, they scouted the Leafs. They saw Ilya Mikheyev. I mean, if you see that highlight of Ilya Mikheyev outracing Connor McDavid on a back check, you know right away that that's attractive to anybody. Like, it doesn't even matter at that point. Like, this guy can keep up with Connor McDavid on a back check. Like, that's unreal speed. And so that's really going to be the big issue the Leafs are going to really have. But look, for the first 2 months, the Leafs didn't have him and they were fine, right? That's their strategy. So they've got that going for them in that regard. But yeah, we were talking about all this stuff with the cap space. They just don't like, that's why the Kylie Yarncroke deal is the way it is. People like kind of got their backs up a little bit that it was a 4-year deal. But when it came out later that the salary in all 4 years was minimum and everything else was signing bonus, it was clear as day that this was going to be another one of those, Andreas Janssen, Kasperi Kapanen type situations where after 2 or 3 years or whatever, if it's not working out anymore, they can easily find a suitor to take the cap hit because the cost will actually be so little. That's the strategy now.
It's a smart strategy. It's flexing your financial muscle when you can't really flex it with the cap, but you can flex it with the signing bonuses. And also it attracts people here too, right? I mean, you give a guy a signing bonus, it makes them, you know, more apt to sign here because they get their money up front.
Kyle Dubas called it the present value of time, right? Like, he's like, look, the Floridas and the Washingtons and the Texas teams, they all have their no state income tax advantage. So there's no reason for the Leafs not to use this. And the other thing about this, and I'm going way too in the weeds on this, the way the Canadian-US tax treaty works is you can defer a lot of money that's paid to you and repatriate those taxes if you have a residence or wherever that taxes less within North America. And so because it's signing bonus and not salary, you can put that money and repatriate it. So like, when Austin Matthews got his money, for example, he could take 85% of that signing bonus that he got, which was a hefty amount, and make that apply to Arizona taxes and not Canadian taxes. So that's the other advantage there. So that's the other thing with the signing bonuses is it's a way to kind of allow people who have different tax harbors to, like under the Canadian-US tax treaty, to repatriate that cash and keep more money in their pocket.
Yeah. These are the little things that you talk about into the weeds. No, I love this stuff because that's the stuff. It allows you to add to an argument if someone's like, well, no, they're going to leave because the way the Canadian taxes are. Well, no, now, you know, if when you hear these things, you're like, well, no, there's ways for it to be worked around up to 85%, like you just said. So, and especially in signing bonus ways. You know, so that's why the Toronto Maple Leafs can flex that muscle and give guys the money that they probably would get anywhere else to a certain degree, which is great, you know, which is, it's good to hear. And a lot of people listening to this, when they do listen to it, will hear that and maybe calm down a little bit on the Austin Matthews and other players on that narrative, because it allows people to keep their money. The guy's getting paid. It's okay. Leave it alone. I want to ask you about Austin Matthews, though. The question I wanted to ask you earlier, when he re-signs, and I believe in my heart of hearts he's going to stick around as a Toronto Maple Leaf. I just do. I don't know why. Call me crazy. Call me whatever. When he re-signs, though, is it going to be a passing of the mantle of the captaincy from John Tavares to Austin Matthews? I asked that because it would be the perfect time to do it. We just talked about his leadership and growth. That would give him an extra couple years. Who knows what the Leafs do in that time. But that would be almost the perfect time for John, not to relinquish, but maybe to, like I say, pass the mantle on to Austin and allow him to usher in the next captaincy era.
I think there's a lot of reasons to do it. And I think there's a lot of reasons to do it before he signs. Ooh. Like, I think you just, you need, like, look, it's going to be a tough thing. And that's just another gesture that the Leafs can make to him to make him want to make a long-term commitment here. And because remember, there was a lot of debate that I don't know this for a fact or whatever, but remember when they were deciding who should be captain, that's when Austin got himself into a little bit of trouble.
Yep.
And for better or worse, I don't know if that was the decision or not, but you know, like it's one of those things where you could show that in this time he's matured. He's really become a leader on the team. And I think for better or worse, it takes the focal point off John Tavares, who can work on his game and other aspects as he tries to adapt, because it was not really the smoothest go for him this past year. So I think for a lot of reasons, I think it would actually take some of the pressure off him and can kind of adjust it. And I think a lot of people want to see Austin Matthews as captain. When you have the coach saying he's our leader,
yeah,
whether it was a slip or not, I think that was the first seed being planted. That it should probably happen, and they should probably have that conversation as part of if he is going to extend or not, or even do it before, just as a gesture. But it's something that John has to also be on board with too. Not that I don't think he would, but it's not unprecedented. In San Jose, they took the captaincy from Patrick Marleau, I believe, and they rotated things, and Patrick Marleau was fine. Like, it was one of these things where there's ways to do this where it doesn't look like the big deal. Like, it's not like the Toronto Sun's going to have like a photo with the C being ripped off and just the stitches and like some crazy pun. Like, I don't think that's going to happen. I think most people would actually think that this is probably where it should have always gone from the beginning, had it not been for that one mishap when they were deciding on a captain. Because that threw a lot of, now he can't be captain right away. Like, even when you were speculating about it, right? So, it was just a bad look. So you can justify this in a lot of different ways where John doesn't have to look bad and John can be on board with it. Or you can have, I don't even think it's wrong to do a captain at home, captain on the road situation. Like, to start as part of a transitionary thing. Like, teams do that also. So I think some form of split where there's that gesture made to show what Austin means to this market will only help and not hurt. So I think that's something that they really do have to consider. And, you know, for me, I would think that, you know, you really can't talk about a contract yet because you can't sign until July 1st, 2023. But you can start doing things to make him feel like he's got to be the guy here. And then the other hard part is, will the cap move enough at that point where it makes sense for him to sign, or will the money that the players owe to the owners take another year before the cap moves up meaningfully and there's more money on the plate for someone like Austin Matthews? It may not necessarily be a Toronto thing. It might be I'm going to wait till the cap number, till we know projection wise that there's going to be more money available, because as things stand right now, the cap's only going to go up another million next year. And that's only another million to kind of work with under the existing cap. So there's that they have to kind of figure out as well. So there's a lot of things that can be construed one way if he does or doesn't, but there's a lot of reasons that can go along with it that are very nuanced.
No, I definitely agree with you. I think the C should go on him sooner than later. I just think, you know, if you're going to do that contract as well, I think the C.
I think it's fine to do it as a, like, for one, for the first year, yep, as a split home road thing, too. I think that's good. But you have a ceremony with John, too, to show that he's on board with it. Because he really has to be. It doesn't work if he's too prideful about it, right? So, but I don't think he's that type. I think he would be on board with something like that if it meant keeping the core together because they truly believe in what they want to do.
Yeah, no, I can definitely see it happening. I definitely can. And I do hope that in 2 years that the cap goes up to a good number. But I think Kyle Dubas is really positioning himself well cap-wise. I mean, a lot of the deals, we talked about it just a moment ago, that are 1 or 2 year deals. Nothing's too long. Even Matt Murray is 2 years, you know, so that money comes off your books. You know, Samsonov, whatever happens there, you know, it's 1 year. So there are guys that will need to get paid, the Michael Buntings, etc. But you look at where he's positioned himself, it's basically keeping the money available for Austin Matthews in case the cap does not go where it needs to go. Taking a lot more money towards him just means he won't be as insulated in Toronto with, you know, supporting cast. Connor McDavid.
Right, but then even then, it's like, what's the number going to be? Like, is he going to make more than McDavid? I guess that's going to happen. But then, you know, a lot of people were not thrilled about the deal Austin Matthews signed. Like, a lot of people felt it was a mistake because you were giving such a high cap hit, buying only 1 year of unrestricted free agency.
I look at it like LeBron James, though. That's the LeBron James thing, right? These kids are watching these big superstar athletes in other sports maximize their earning windows by shotting shorter contracts. I think
that's gonna be he could have done that by signing a 3 year deal and then making an even bigger one after. Like, the problem was he went straight from his ELC to a 6 year deal that only bought 1 year of unrestricted free agency, which was unheard of for that type of deal at that time. Like, even the Mitch Marner one at least bought 2 years. Like, yeah. Like, it's very different. And if he walks away, if he ends up walking away, it may go down as one of the worst contracts signed if he walks away.
Yeah.
Not if saying he will, but if he does, which is his right, it will forever be known as one of the worst possible deals to sign because you gave him so much so early and only bought 1 year. And like, even with McDavid, like, straight out of that, it was an 8 year deal. And even with, you know, other guys, it's like, okay, well, then you do a bridge and then you do the big money deal. Right. So they didn't even do that. And so, and for better or worse, it really did hurt the Leafs in terms of not what he made, but all the other ones, like the Tavares contract and all the other ones when the price was set so high after they got Tavares that, you know, hindsight's 2020, but I equate it to buying a house when the market goes bust because they were always expecting the cap to go up and up and that was going to be their way out of it. And if COVID never happened, perhaps that would have been the case. But when the market when everything went flat, it was 50% cap hit on four guys for many years. And they got creative and they found ways to kind of get some depth pieces and still had 115 points in a season, which is a franchise record. Not going to take any of that away from them. But they still haven't gotten past the first round with this core, and that's still the big problem right now. And everything in a vacuum, they ran into the defending cup champs and all that and refereeing, and people make the excuses. But it's not – the results speak, and they don't have the results yet. And that's really what this last 4 years have been defined by.
No, I 100% agree with you. Yeah, I want to see them take the next step. I do think the next step is coming. For this squad, I want to ask you a couple final questions here. I can hear the clicking in the background, so I know someone needs to definitely probably go out. So I remember a previous podcast, your dog has made an appearance on the show. So
yeah, she likes to bark.
That's perfectly all right. Mine are gated upstairs with mom, so I'm pretty lucky right now. I don't have to downstairs with me. I want to ask this team here, the Toronto Maple Leafs, going into this season, what they've done on paper. Do you foresee any more moves before opening night. Obviously, they're over the cap, but there's a lot of guys that they can send down that will even out that number or bring it pretty darn close if they need to, the Cadets, the Simmons, the Cliffords. A lot of guys are on that wavelength where they can move them down. But do you foresee another shoe to fall here? A lot of people seem to think so. Kyle Dubas has said as much. He's not done. But do you see a major piece moving to free up the cap space?
Well, let's look at those comments. When he said they weren't done, that was at the draft, and that was after the first day of free agency.
Yep.
And then they picked up a couple of defensemen, and they picked up Yarncroke, right? So yep. They weren't done. They could be done now. If they get Rasmus Sandin done, they might be able to be done now. But here's the other thing I'll say about the salary cap. So everyone's been talking about how, you know, they don't have room and they don't have room or whatever. They don't have room for Sandin signs for a modest raise arbitrarily, like 50% more than what he's making or whatever. Don't know what he's actually going to get. Lots to figure out, right?
Yep.
Let's just hypothetically speaking say they got him and the Leafs are like $2.5 million over the cap with 23 players or whatever it is. Okay, let's just make that argument.
Yep.
First off, they don't need to carry 23 players on their active roster. They only need to carry 20. And if you recall, when they were tight against the cap before, they waived guys at the final day and they only carried 20 to 21 when they were fully healthy. Like, that's all they did. Now, they don't have any entry-level guys that they could just move up and down, so that complicates things in that regard. But also, you know, you could put Simmons on waivers. You can put other guys on waivers that you would expect would probably clear, and then they can just kind of bounce up and down with the Marlies if they're not used with all these other guys that they have. So there's that. But here's the golden kicker, and this is what a lot of people forget about the salary cap. And this is something that Lou Lamoriello preaches when it comes to negotiating with people and roster transactions. And his philosophy is time is like on your side. You do not need to do anything right now.
Nope.
And the cap, you're allowed to be 10% over the cap up until the day before the season begins. And so what happened days before the season began last year? Do you remember?
Flurry of moves.
No, but there was a big one that gave them a lot of roster relief.
Oh, the injury to Ilya Mikheyev.
Exactly. So who knows what the hell can happen between now and training camp where someone gets hurt in one of 8 preseason games and has to go on LTI or whatever. And that just automatically does whatever needs to be done for them at the time. Not saying that that's their game plan, but I'm just saying that if it was this way and they were over the cap, it doesn't mean anything. It doesn't mean another move has to happen. It means that between now and the day before the season, they're not cap compliant and something might need to be done, but something might be taken care of for them at that point. So they really don't need to do anything at that time. And you can remove guys. You can only carry, like, they might get 23 guys signed, but they only need to carry 20. And then they could just waive guys and have the 30-day roster flexibility that way for the days where they need the flexibility and, like, bring up a guy for an extra body, send them back down, vice versa, and do all that fun stuff. So there might be other moves coming. They still have to figure out what's going to happen with Rasmus Sandin. Where does he fit on this roster? That's another question.
Yeah.
There's a lot of talk about Alex Kerfoot, but I don't necessarily think he has to be moved in order for the cap to make sense. They're going to need the forward depth, and he was a pretty useful player for them. Like, yep. Sheldon really liked having Alex Kerfoot around. I don't think they're just ready to just move him just to clear space because he only costs the minimum salary now after his deal right now. So I don't think that's that. If something is there that makes them better, sure, they might do that, but I don't think it's a necessary move. It is a bit crowded on D now a little bit, and I'm curious to see where Rasmus Sandin now fits with everything, if they try him on the right side or what they do there once they get him signed, which there might be a bit more clarity on Friday when the deadline comes for him to sign his qualifying offer.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. I'm looking forward to seeing what happens with the defense. I'm really looking forward to seeing what's happening with Matt Murray and Ilya Samsonov. I really want to see what that goalie tandem can do.
It's going to be the number one story for days. It really is. It's the goaltending was such a circus in 2022. In 2021, it seemed fine, although Peter Mrazek got hurt his very first game and then couldn't get healthy after that. But in 2022, it was such a circus. And it looks like for the beginning of 2022, it might be the same thing. But we'll see. It's going to be an open competition, they say. I imagine Murray will take the first chance. Well, he'll take the first chance. But if it's clear that Samsonov is actually performing better, I don't think they'll hesitate to pull the shoot on that and figure out what they're going to do. But it's a gamble for sure. And that move to me suggested to me that that Kyle Dubas has the support to kind of do whatever he wants, because if he really was worried that this was the year and he was gone, maybe he does make the commitment to someone more long-term because it wouldn't be his problem anymore.
That's very, very true. I'm hoping Matt Murray bounces back myself. I really do. I really like the story, you know, he told when he came a Leaf, you know, about his dad and him watching that and, you know, feeling closer to his dad. That was really, really something that hit home with me. I really want to see this guy do well. And you know what? There's been so many players, David, that have come through the Maple Leafs, Tyler Ennis, Jason Spezza, and Joe Thornton, many others, who've raved about the way the Maple Leafs staff, medical staff, the facilities, everything has really helped them come along as players and rejuvenate them, or, you know, get them back to where they need to be playing properly. So I'm hoping whatever the Leafs have magic-wise, they can sprinkle some on Matt Murray and bring him back for us, and let's have some fun and watch a goaltender with playoff experience lead the Leafs to something.
Do you remember when Joe Thornton was on the first line with Matthews and Marner to start the 2021 season?
Yes, I do.
That was something else. It was a fun experiment, and I get it. Like, it made sense for a lot of guys who just hadn't been playing hockey for so long that he could kind of hang with it until everyone's conditioning kind of caught up. It's not too dissimilar to what the Marlies or what the Maple Leafs did in 2013 when they had Ben Scrivens start their season and Mike Koska was the first pair D with Dion Phaneuf, because Koska had been playing every day where the other guys hadn't been. So it's not too dissimilar in that, but it just kind of goes to show you how weird the last couple of years can be.
Oh, 100%. One thing that hasn't been weird is getting you on the show and getting to talk about the Maple Leafs. I love it, man. I love having you on. I look forward to getting you on again towards, some point in training camp. Get your feel on things again. My friend, I'm very happy to have you on. I want to ask, how is everything going with the new venture? Obviously moving last summer, I think it was, over to where you are now and where you've been writing.
Oh, yeah. No, it wasn't even last summer. It was in January.
Yes, it was. Sorry.
It's okay. It's a whirlwind. I joke with my colleagues now that I'm the Mike Sillinger of sports media because I just move around a lot in those situations and don't go long-term anywhere. And that's not necessarily by choice. That's also the nature of the industry. It can be brutal. Like, it really can be brutal. And but for those who love it, they try to find a stick and stick in a way. And for me, this venture with Sports Illustrated was so important for me, because actually 2 years ago when they were in a partnership with the Hockey News, the structure of how I'm doing this now was the idea for what I was supposed to be doing with the Hockey News, which was a separate team site dedicated to Leafs content where I would essentially run it. And so the structure of it is publisher, not just reporter, like I'm doing everything because it's essentially my site within Sports Illustrated. So that's the structure I've always wanted. It frees me up to, if I build it up, that I can build I get a staff under me for it. If the web traffic starts to grow, which I'm hoping with my following, the interest, all that other stuff, I can grow this into a nice little business. And so in that regard, this is the last move I hope to make in a while. I've got other announcements I'm hoping to announce soon that are unrelated to writing. Well, some are related to writing. One's a newsletter and then maybe a potential podcast, but those are still kind of being figured out. But yeah, we're living in an age now, and you're doing this with your venture too, that, you know, if you just work on you, yep, you can be you and do the job the way you want to do it. And that's what I'm very happy about with the Sports Illustrated structure, because it really does allow for me to be me and run things the way I want to run it. If I have a day where I don't feel like writing, or it's too busy because I'm traveling, I'm not answering to an editor in chief who's like, we need this now. So having that liberty and having the ability to do that and just interact with fans that way has been very liberating. And so I'm very excited for it.
Well, we're looking forward to every venture. And of course, I always tell people where I get most of my news and information from. This guy beside me can vouch. When we have our group chats, I'm always posting things from your Twitter page, the quotes and things. That's where I get my information. So I love, man.
Yeah, I can't tell you how much I appreciate the support. Like, just hearing that, it means the world to me. So I do appreciate it.
It's not a worry at all. I just hope if there is a David Alter-esque podcast in the works, I hope we still get to have your voice over here sometimes too.
Yeah. There's no exclusivity like that. It's I started my career in radio, and I haven't had a podcast since 2017. And that was when I was working at The Athletic at the time. And so I miss it. It's my favorite. Chatting is my favorite medium. I like it more than I like writing.
I can tell.
It's a platform that begs for me to come back to, and it was just a matter of finding the right company, the right people that are like-minded like myself, to kind of where it makes sense, because the worst thing I could have done is start one and then stop it because it's not working. Yeah. I really don't want to make an announcement and be like, well, now it's over. In fact, I saw on Reddit when I made my announcement with Sports Illustrated, one guy replied, and he was totally right. I was joking. I was laughing when I read it. He's like, I like that David Alter guy. I follow him and everything, and I wish him nothing but the best, but this guy has too many job announcements. And like, I was like, you know, like, you're right. I do. It's not by design, but like, I do. So I'm hoping the SI one will be the last one for a while. But the other thing too is, look, I was the only reporter on the road for every game last season. And the reason why was because I was looking for a structure that would allow me to do the job the way I feel Leaf fans want the job done.
Yep.
And when you had legacy places just kind of cheaping out, well, we don't need to go to this game or that game or budgeting and all that stuff, like, you guys co-own the team. Like, really? Like, the nickeling and diming, like, they may think in the short term it's not doing any damage, but, you know, younger people notice that stuff. They do. Oh, especially, yes, Leaf enthusiasts. So like, when there's times where I'm doing these news conferences, I'm the only one there, I'm like, oh, my God. So again, with this other structure, it will still allow me to do the job the way I want to do it, which is covering every game and making sure everything gets covered. So that's just the way it goes.
No, like I said, we're pumped, man. Absolutely pumped. I love reading your stuff. You have usually you're the first one with the quote, and then everybody breaks down your quotes and starts spreading them around throughout the Leafs lure. So I know you're a go-to spot over here, and you're a go-to spot for a lot of people, my friend. So keep doing the hard work. We appreciate having you on, my friend. I'm not going to take up any more of your.
That's okay.
Oh. James,
I think we lost your mic, James.
James, you muted.
There you go.
You might be back. All right. Well, I want to appreciate you. Say, I appreciate you having on. Look forward to talking to you towards training camp. Also, just want to say shout out to our sponsor, Boxing Rock Brewing Co. Here's the Puck Off Lagerdale, the big beer for the big game or the big podcast, whatever you want to do. All right, ladies and gentlemen, this right here is Offside Hockey Talk, where hockey comes to talk. a special one with our friend David Alter.